This is Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.
I'm Johnny Hart. This is the Market Insights Market Pulse podcast. Let's join trader Nick in the United States for the latest from the markets. Nick, good afternoon from London. Good morning to you.
Hey, Johnny. Good morning. Good to be back with you.
It is an extremely busy day or two. Let's go back a bit, talk about what happened yesterday with the Federal Reserve. Of course, it was the last meeting with Jerome Powell. He has said he's going to stay on until the probe is well and truly over. The upshot of the meeting was that US interest rates will stay on hold for the time being. Having said that, the forward guidance was what?
Yes. So yesterday marked the last press conference with Jerome Powell. Kevin Warsh will be taking the stage, but the question kind of looming over yesterday's meeting was, as Jerome Powell is going to stay at the Fed, he's going to be taking back his role as a Fed governor, his involvement and participation will kind of be ongoing to his own discretion, it sounded like. Like, people asked him, they pressed him, like, how long will you stay on? At what point will you, you know, leave, et cetera? And he kind of said, you know, for as long as he thinks it's right to stay on. And, you know, so there was a little bit of vagueness there. But I think that, of course, his big mantra there yesterday, he did kind of take the opportunity with the last chance at the mic like that, with all eyes on him, to advocate for Fed independence. He reiterated several times during his press conference speech, basically that successful nations, this is the model that works, is having a third party monetary policy leadership that is not dictated by the current leading party. And so he reiterated that a couple times during his speech, just kind of suggesting his stance on the importance of Fed independence. He also mentioned that it was concerning in regards to things like the investigation into Lisa Cook and himself, that was unprecedented, and he felt that Fed independence is more at jeopardy than it has been in the past. So it's an interesting stance, because he also spoke highly of Kevin Warsh, thinks that he will do a great job. So that is a good passing of the torch. The question, I guess, now becomes, how do we see things going from here? What's the changes that are coming to the Fed? And we've talked a little bit about it. Kevin Warsh likely to be a little bit more, he's mentioned not wanting to give as much forward guidance from the Federal Reserve, as well as being more predictive rather than reactive, in the sense that, you know, he sees, for example, he's talked about lowering interest rates is more feasible given the changes in technology and AI, et cetera. He thinks that it could be deflationary or disinflationary, which is interesting, because that's a very different tone than the Jerome Powell that we're used to, which is, you know, you wait for data to confirm an idea before making a move. Now, there are pros and cons to each. And for listeners, I've drawn the comparison to Jerome Powell is like a slow moving average, where Kevin Warsh is more of a fast moving average. There are pros and cons of each of these two types of technical indicators for those familiar with charting, right? When we're looking at a fast moving average, sure, it adjusts quickly to new information, but it also can give you a false signal. Same too with the slow moving average. There's a pro and con in the sense that a slow moving average looks at more data behind it. So it moves slower and confirms a move, but it also can be late to the party. And hence, you know, the White House's accusations of, you know, too late Powell, quote unquote. But there are pros and cons with each school of thought. And it'll be very interesting to see how a very experienced person like Kevin Warsh will do at the stand. So mostly a peaceful and pass of the torch. And so we'll see how everything plays out next. But in regards to the overall consensus of the Fed, they are still seemingly pretty decisively on pause, reiterated yesterday during the press conference. And so dollar did gain some strength during that time, has since fallen due to some other news in regards to Bank of Japan intervention, some really yen strength coming in overnight. Many things to talk about today, Johnny.
Going back to Kevin Warsh, yes, he is President Trump's pick, isn't he? But he will face the same pressure from the president, and at the same time has vowed to uphold the Fed's independence when he takes over. So in terms of interest rates, it's going to be very difficult for him to justify anything but those going up, because we've seen actually in the last 24 hours, hopes of any imminent rate cuts completely dashed with a fresh oil price bounce spurred by expectations that the US will maintain its blockade of Iranian ports for the long haul. We could even see further military action from the United States, because that was intimated by the president over the last 24 hours. So oil price now at near, what, 3-4 year highs. It's going to be very, very difficult, isn't it, for Warsh to do anything but raise them going forward. So it's going to be absolutely fascinating, isn't it?
It is. And there's another thing here, too. Kevin Warsh is a young man in regards to the role of Fed chair, and has the potential, I saw someone talking about this, to be the longest serving Fed chair. I bring that up because, yes, he has been nominated by Trump, but remember, so too was Jerome Powell. And at most, at odds, you know, these people are Fed officials, true and true. They are true to the cause there. They're also true to their own legacy. We heard talks about Jerome Powell's legacy yesterday, and how, you know, how they want to be remembered positively. And the biggest critics within the Fed are themselves, right? Their own peers. Powell talked about how hard it can be to corral your own Fed official committee. And so I don't think that it would be wise, and I don't think it is likely, that if Kevin Warsh took the stand and tried to just do everything that Trump wants, lower interest rates, or the next Fed for that matter, every president is going to want lower interest rates, easier monetary policy. The Fed, especially someone like Kevin Warsh, is wise enough, I would argue, to make the decision to stay loyal to the Fed and to the cause. And that's the only way you're going to really get anything done. It is a democratic role. It's you know, there's a committee of people that you are working, you know, shoulder to shoulder with. And so I think most likely that will stay the case. And then you also brought up oil prices. Yes, I mean, Johnny, it's very much a little bit of a concerning thing, in my opinion, that you have the NASDAQ at all-time highs and you have oil prices at 105.5. I would ask the audience and yourself, Johnny, I'm curious your thoughts on this. Let's say we wind back the clock, end of 2025, oil is trading in the 50s or 60s, and you tell me that we double in oil price, and I would ask you, how far down is the stock market? I would ask you, is it 10%, 15%, 20%? Nope, it's at all-time highs. Very, very interesting. And again, there is a narrative that we'll talk about in just a second that is very strong right now, which is powerful corporate earnings growth, semiconductors, AI, build-outs, data centers. That is an exciting story, and that is not something that we should just ignore entirely. But it does seem like the market is mostly shrugging off concerns about what is a pretty scary looking future for gas prices if this thing persists.
Is it a question that the markets are maybe in a little bit of denial, what is going on? Or, as you said, there are industries that are actually still growing. The numbers are a reflection of that. Of course, energy companies, oil companies, they've seen big increases in their share prices as well, because they're doing pretty well out of this situation. So it's a rather skewed data set, isn't it, where you've got, on the one hand, ordinary folk like us who may be struggling to cope with inflation, rising energy prices, and so on, ordinary businesses, but then you've got these other sets of businesses which are doing very well.
No, you said that really well, and I will never forget. I heard this somewhere. I don't know where I heard it, but it has stuck with me over the years, which is the stock market is mostly an optimistic market, and the bond market is more for the pessimists. And not necessarily to say that one is always right or wrong, because in a bull market, obviously, the optimistic view has been very proven correct. But when I say that, what I'm referring to is, look at yields, look at bonds. Bonds for the U.S. are down, right? You have yields moving higher. Bonds have not recovered at all from the war stuff that broke out, right? The concerns about inflation, the concerns about high oil prices. So you look at the oil impact, and it is seen in the bonds market. But meanwhile, you have the stock market trading at all-time highs. Well, that is because there's a lot of hype around the data center stuff. And I figured this would be a good time also just to briefly touch on the earnings reports that we had last night. We had four mega tech companies And I'll see if I can list them off the top of my head. We had Meta, Microsoft, Alphabet, and Amazon, and all of them beat earnings estimates very nicely. We had strong guidance as well. And maybe the most important part here, and this is maybe our missing link in this conversation, Johnny, is the AI-specific components of their businesses, Google Cloud, Microsoft Azure. Like, you have all these different cloud and AI-related revenues. Those were strong. And that is what the market is really excited about, because that kind of contributes towards, let's get these data centers built. There is revenue on the other side. There's a gold rush that is driving all this spending, and it doesn't seem to be slowing. And so that right there kind of puts into, I mean, if I told you that there is massive revenue for us waiting, if we can build out these, this infrastructure, you and I would be like, all right, let's go into business. Let's build that data center or whatever. So I think that's kind of the idea as to why the market is so optimistic, despite it very, very clearly concerning oil prices. I don't know that it's completely ignoring it because, to your point, not all stocks are feeling the same way. We are back to a situation in which the Magnificent Seven, the big winners within the AI story, semiconductors, they're doing excellent, whereas other companies are kind of doing not so great and are feeling the impacts of these oil prices that you brought up.
But also, we've seen a bit of a contrast between Meta and the other three that you mentioned, Alphabet, Microsoft, and Amazon, because Meta's share price really slumped because it has said it needed to spend even more money to get the results it's wanting from AI. So they are a bit behind the curve, aren't they, at Meta? They've taken the brunt of investor concerns.
Yes, and also to add to that, Amazon, all of these companies had good, strong earnings, including Meta. However, the price reaction is what's kind of interesting here too, because Meta, as you pointed out, more spending needed. They're all issuing guidance to spend more money. They're also just seeing the to an extent, revenue growth, perhaps Meta not as impressive in that world. What's kind of interesting, though, is the share price reaction. We are seeing all of these stocks to some degree giving back some of those gains or going more in the red. Google is up the most, up about 6% at the time of recording. Meta is getting hit hard here today, almost down 10%. Amazon is, despite really good numbers, down 1.3%. Johnny, perhaps what this implies about the state of this market is that there is very high expectations. I don't think that's saying very much, given that the stock market has been on, by the way, I read this morning, the best one-month return for the stock market since 2020. So April was a monster month for these stocks. And so you had this very high expectation going into the earnings release.
I've got to ask you about what's happening over here on this side of the pond, Nick, because we did have the Bank of England, as expected, voting to keep borrowing costs 3.75%. There was one on the MPC committee who voted to raise rates. Obviously, there is a major concern, as there is everywhere, over inflation and the price of oil and energy. And in fact, the Bank of England has signaled that interest rates could rise this year as it attempts to curb inflation. We've had a quote from the governor of the Bank of England, Andrew Bailey, who says the war in the Middle East is causing inflation to rise again this year. We'll continue to monitor the situation and its impact on the UK economy very closely. I suppose the question is, at what point are we going to see a rise in rates? Looking at the oil price today, the price of Brent has hit $126. That's the highest for 4 years. As I said, following the reports that the US may resume attacks on Iran. So Bank of England's in a tough situation as well.
Yeah, that's right. And again, largely contributing to that is the concerns around oil prices, as you mentioned. And Governor Bailey also mentioned that the kind of stating the obvious here, but it is important to mention that you have this rise in fuel prices is something that central banks can't control, right? They can't. We heard this from Powell as well yesterday. The Bank of England, the Fed, like, they can't control what is happening with these oil prices. And so they have to some extent, stay sidelined in the meantime. But to what you just pointed out, probabilities for rate hikes actually improved or increased for the Bank of England going forward. So dealing with sticky inflation and problematic, I mean, definitely a turnaround from where we were a few months back before this, where the Bank of England was geared up for some rate cuts. So challenging, difficult circumstance, I think, globally. You know, many people, many central banks especially, are hoping for the resolution to the Middle East stuff, perhaps to keep gas prices at bay and not seeing that $200 per barrel concern that we keep hearing people say about oil. So we'll have to keep an eye on it, because that would certainly cause for a shakeup in markets.
Nick, thanks very much for joining us today. We'll speak to you again on Friday.
Thanks, Johnny. Speak to you then.
Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.